We are holding on Gimel Amud Aleph top line. And we said in the Mishnah, the Mishnah had listed a bunch of things that the Beis Din would start taking care of on the 15th of Adar. We said on Rosh Chodesh Adar, they would start announcing that everybody has to get ready for their Matzah Shekel. And on the 15th, we said, so on the 15th, actually, we didn't mention about the Matzah Shekel yet. That's going to be in the Mishnah on Amud Beis, but we mentioned a bunch of other things that take place on the 15th, and that's all by way of introduction to eventually in Halacha Gimel, in Mishnah Gimel, we're going to describe that on the 15th, they would start actually collecting the Matzah Shekel. So the Mishnah had mentioned a bunch of things that take place on the beginning on the 15th of Adar. Misaknen es adrochim, they would fix the roads. The roads and the squares that we talked about yesterday, different possibilities of what drochim versus rechoivos are. It means side streets versus main streets, or it means streets versus highways between the cities, whatever. There's mikvois amayim, they would fix up the mikvois. As we said, if there was dirt in them, they would clean them out. If they didn't have 40 sar in them, they'd make sure to arrange that they get refilled. V'oisin kol tzorchei rabim, and the Mishnah had said they do all kinds of tzorchei rabim, all kinds of public needs. So the Gemara says, Elu hein tzorchei rabim, what do we mean by a list of tzorchei rabim? Donin dinim mominus, v'dinin afoshus, dinim makus, means that the bate dinim would judge cases of dinim mominus and dinim afoshus and cases where a person needs malchus. Now, we don't mean they couldn't do that the rest of the year, but we mean that this time, beginning the 15th of Adar, they would be trying to clear out their backlog for the year. The Meiri brings an idea of this. We have the expression Tichla Shana V'Kilol Oisel. The same way as we say, for example, that we want to read the Klolos, the Teuchecha in Parshas Kisavo before Rosh Hashanah. So that way we end off the year with Klolos and then we start a good new year. So the same way over here, they wanted to clear out this backlog. People who have to be Mechoy of Mrs. Bastin or Mechoy of Malkus or Mechoy to pay money or whatever. Let's get it over with at the end of the year. And then Rosh Chodesh Nissen, which to that extent is considered the beginning of a new year. And then we'll have a good year after that. Also, poidin erchim b'charamim v'hekdeshes. Also, they would arrange for the redemption of erchim and charamim and hekdeshes. Erchim is where a person says, "I pledge my erech," or "I pledge so and so's erech to the Beis Hamikdash." And we look up the table in Parshas B'chukosai that tells us, depending on the person's age and gender, how much you have to pay. Charamim, there's actually two different kinds of charamim, but the kind that we're mentioning over here are chermei hektish, which means that you're saying that it's a form of hektish where you're saying I'm donating this to the Beis Hamikdash, but it's instead of being called regular hektish, it's called cherem. But that also, like any other hektish, though, you can buy it back from the Beis Hamikdash. So the gizborim, the treasurers of the Beis Hamikdash, would arrange to get that dealt with. And hektishes are regular cases of hektish. We didn't say cherem, he just said hektish. So again, not to say that we have to do those things davka, the end of Adar, but again, that would be the time of year to finish them off for the year. Umashkin as a soita, they would give the soita to drink, checking, in other words, on the situation, whether the circumstances are such that she needs to drink or whether she's one of the women who's not able to, etc. And then we arrange that. V'sofen es ha-parah, if a parah aduma needs to be brought, then we take care of that, we burn it. V'ofen egla arufa, if an egla arufa needs to be brought because they found a dead body outside a city, then they arrange it then. Some of these things also is partially because aside from the fact that it's towards the end of the year, there's also during the winter time, it's rainy and it's hard for people to travel. So for example, some of these things, let's say, for example, as far as the soita, where she has to come to Yerushalayim, her husband has to bring her to Yerushalayim, or the Egla Arufa, where the Sanhedrin has to travel out there in order to measure where's the closest city. So practically speaking, those kinds of things, it may be hard to accomplish during the winter, and therefore they would start doing them Tesvav Adar, where then the rainy season is basically over.
A soita sometimes cannot live with her husband until she goes to drink the water. So why dafka then? They would travel because if they can't live together, they probably would do it earlier.
It's possible. And again, you're allowed
to do it early if you want to.
You're allowed to do it earlier. We're just saying that this is the time when the Bate Dinim would look over their backlog of cases and get everything dealt with. Reutzen Evid Ivri, they would do the piercing of the ear of an Evid Ivri who wanted to stay on beyond 6 years. Or Mataren as a Mitzoda, they would they'd be Matahar if a Mitzoda needs his Tahara with the birds and everything. Or Mefalken as a man or as a min or me'al geve hamayim ve'en machzirin oisa. And one more thing, they would take off the locks from the water pits and not put them back. Now, what does that mean? So during the winter, you had water pits where during the winter they were getting filled up with rainwater. Now comes Tesvav Adar. Again, it's basically the end of the rainy season. So therefore, now at this point, we want to make that water available for people to be able to draw. So therefore, we unlock them. And we don't lock them again for the rest of the season because during the summertime, it almost never rains in Eretz Yisrael. So that's the time, in other words, when we want to have them open for people to be able to draw water from them. A whole different explanation of this is not minol, doesn't mean a lock, but minol, rather another explanation, means a shoe. And hamayim would actually be imum, which means a last, which in English is called a last, is the form, the leather or metal or whatever form that you put that you shape a shoe on. When a shoemaker is making shoes, he puts the leather on top of an imum, on top of a form, the shape and the size of the shoe, and then hammers the leather into place. So then according to that, so what does that have to do with Tesvav Adar? And the answer is nothing. According to that way of understanding it, the Braisa, the Gemara is actually quoting a Braisa that is talking about things that you're allowed to do during Chalamoyed. So in other words, then the focus is not so much over here on explaining what Sochei Rabim are, but rather the Gemara is bringing a Braisa about the Dinim of Chalamoyed. The point would be then, according to that, that all of these things we just listed, Dinim Momenes, Dinim Nefashis, Erchin V'Charamim, et cetera, all of these things are things that you're allowed to do during Chalamoyed. And then the last one would be that aside from things that Beis Din does, is also you should know that if you were a shoemaker and you had a shoe on the last before Yom Tov, then you're allowed to take it off there on Chalamoyed and start wearing it. But you're not allowed to put it there on the last because that would be doing malacha on Chalamoyed. So then in that case, if we say that it's that way, if we say that the Gemara is bringing it not so much in order to, if we say that the Gemara is bringing this as a list of things that you can do in Chalamoyed, then it's not really to explain what the Tzorchei Rabim are of our Mishnah. It's rather in order to point out a contradiction between this Braisa and our Mishnah. Namely, Tamon Tanenon, we learn in a Mishnah, to be the first Mishnah of Moed Katan, Mashkin Beis HaSholchin, that one of the things you're allowed to do during Chalamoyed, you're allowed to water a field that needs irrigation. So if it's a field that doesn't need irrigation, then you just let it rain, and that's that. But if it's a field that needs irrigation, and otherwise it's going to dry out, you're allowed to do that on Chalamoyed, because otherwise it would be Dover HaAvod, the produce in the field is going to be lost. Umitzainen alakvaris, and also during Chalamoyed, you're allowed to mark Kvarim, which we're going to explain, that we're going to start explaining now in a couple of lines about this business of marking Kvarim. The idea is that you want to mark them, as we learned in the Mishnah, with plaster. That way people won't come to accidentally step over them and become tummy. So the point is then, the Gemara says, the contradiction is Loi Kvar Tziyunu Me'Adar. In our Mishnah, we said that they marked the Kvarim already in Adar. It's one of the things that we said in our Mishnah that you do on Tesvav Adar. So why is the Braisa saying that they do it during Chalamoyed, which implies during Chalamoyed Pesach is only a month later? Why would they need to do it then? And the answer is V'tiftar. You can answer the contradiction. Sheyored Shetef Shogshama V'Shof. So it's true that usually the rainy season is more or less over by Tesvav Adar, but it could happen that there's a rainstorm after that. So if it happens that there's a rainstorm and it washes away the plaster, so then Chalamoyed, you might have to go and do it again. So we're not saying that on a regular basis they would do it during Chalamoyed, but if they needed to, then that would be the next time to redo it would be Chalamoyed. Actually, an interesting point in that regard that Mefarshim say is there's a reason why Beis Din would Davka want to do it during Chalamoyed, because then they can hire workers more cheaply. The rest of the year, workers are working, and if you want to hire them away in order to mark these graves, then you're going to need to pay them more. Chalamoyed, most people are off work, so therefore you can get them cheaper, and therefore Beis Din might prefer to do that. So we're saying in our Mishnah, the better time to start doing that is actually from Tesvav Adar, but if they did, They went and marked them on and during the days after Tesfav Adar, but then there was a rainstorm and it got washed away. Then the next good time for them to have people do it is Chol HaMoed. Then also that the Mishnah there in Moed Katan says V'yotzim afal kilayim, that Beis Din would also send out messengers to see what's the story with people's kilayim. As we said in our Mishnah, you can have a case where a person planted their field and they accidentally have some other kind of grain or some other kind of vegetables or what have you mixed in there, and then once it starts growing, then it's noticeable that's kilayim, and therefore so again the question is. Again, the question is, in our Mishnah, we said that the Shluchei Beis Din go out to look about it. The last words of our Mishnah were V'yotzin Afal HaKilayim, that they go out beginning Tesvav Adar to check on it and see whether people did what they were supposed to remove the Kilayim. So again, why is that Brais, why is that Mishnah in Moed Katan say that they would look for it during Chol HaMoed? And the answer is, again, Tifta, you can answer, Shoisa Shana Afila. Let's say it was a late year, the crops are growing later than usual, or it could be like this year, for example, where Pesach is very early in the secular year. So it so happens that Tesvav Adar, the plants are not really that noticeable yet. So then comes Tesvav Adar, you're not going to really be able to tell whether there's Kilayim. So therefore, the Shluchei Beis Din would go out during Chol HaMoed Pesach. But if it was a regular year, if it was a regular year and the crops have already started growing on Tesvav Nisan and by Tesvav Adar, then you're right, you don't need to go out again during Chol HaMoed. Actually, the Bavli in Moed Katan gives a different answer. It says there's a difference between grain and vegetables. Grain you plant during the fall, so by the time it comes Tesvav Adar in a regular year or once in a while, or by the time it comes Tesvav Adar, it's already grown enough to be noticeable, for example, what's wheat and what's barley and various other kinds of species, whereas what we're talking about over here with Chol HaMoed would be as far as vegetables, where you plant them later, you plant them during the winter. So then comes Tesvav Adar, they may not be mature enough yet to be able to tell what's what, and therefore Chol HaMoed Pesach is the time to go and look at it. Okay. Now, we mentioned that one of the things that they do on Tesvav Adar, and also one of the things that you're allowed to do during Chol HaMoed, is to mark Kvarim. So let's talk a little bit about that. Minayin Letzion, where do we have a source in a pasuk for this idea of marking a place where there's a caver, or not even a caver of a whole body, as we're going to talk about? It can mean even when there's individual bones of something, the kind of thing, though, where they would be metame, a person who passes over them. Where do we see a source in a pasuk, or a remez in a pasuk, for this idea that we have to mark that area? So Rabbi Rechia, Rabbi Yaakov, Barbas Yaakov, B'shem Rabbi Chunya de Bras Chavron. Rabbi Rechia says in the name of Rabbi Yaakov, the son of the daughter of Yaakov, in the name of Rabbi Chunya de Bras Chavron. He's called, Rabbi Yaakov is called Barbas Yaakov, Rashi mentions in other places, because his father was not an Erlicha person, so we didn't want to call Rabbi Yaakov, the son, by his father's name, so instead we call him by his grandfather's name. There's a concept about that brought in Halacha. If, for example, let's say a person's father, imagine, for example, a person's father was a Meshumad, a Rahman al-Tzlan or something, so when you call him up to the Torah, you don't call him up by his father's name, then based on that, you call him by his grandfather's name. Anyway, so that's one source. Rabbi Yosef, Amrila, Rabbi Yosef, and then Rabbi Chunya de Bras Chavron says it in the name of Rabbi Yosef. Amrila Rabbi Yaakov ba'acha b'shem Rabbi Chunya de Bras Chavron. Another version is that Rabbi Yaakov ba'acha said in the name of Rabbi Chunya de Bras Chavron. Another version is Rabbi Chizkiah, Rabbi Uziel, Breder Rabbi Chunya de Bras Chavron, b'shem Rabbi Chunya de Bras Chavron. Another version is Rabbi Chizkiah says in the name of Rabbi Uziel, the son of Rabbi Chunya de Bras Chavron, who said it in the name of his father. Anyway, Where do we see this idea of tzion, of marking a grave? The pasuk says by Metzora, the tome tome yikra. Now the simple meaning is we always understand that it means he should call out tome tome. You should call out, I'm tome, stay away from me. But we also understand it to mean it means the tome person or the tome thing should call out tome, meaning you want the tumah itself to be verbally calling out to you and telling you stay away. Now obviously a caver is not going to be able to do it, so therefore you mark it with plaster, and that in itself is that way you'll notice the plaster, and that way you'll know to stay away and not become tome. So that's a source for this idea of putting plaster there in order to mark it. And as we talked about yesterday, the Gemara explains, I think in Bava Kamma, the reason why Davka plaster is because plaster is white, and therefore that evokes bones, which are also white. And as the Gemara is going to say soon, primarily what we're talking about is you want to be able to mark bones because flesh is going to decay fairly quickly anyway. So therefore we use plaster, which is white, so that way it'll remind people that there are bones over here and to stay away. Rabbi Ila says in the name of Shmuel bar Nachman, a different source for the idea of marking kvarim. The pasuk says in connection in Yechezkel, you have the whole thing over there about the war of Gog and Magog. We read it as the Haftorah of Shabbos of Shabbos Chol Moed Sukkos. So we say over there that after the armies of Gog and Magog are wiped out, so the pasuk describes how the Jews are going to take the dead bodies and bury them. And first of all, in order to clean up Eretz Yisrael, so there's no Truma lying around. And second of all, it'll make a tremendous Kiddush Hashem that everybody will realize that we show honor, we show human dignity even to our enemies, and we bury them. Anyway, so then the Pasuk says, if you have people passing through the land, the Pasuk is saying over there that you have people who are in charge to constantly go around and look and see if there are any pieces that didn't get buried. The raw etzem adam, if they see a human bone, uvana etzleit tzion, then they'll build next to it a marker. And then eventually the people in charge will go and take that and bury it in Gei Hamoin Goig together with all the other bodies. So therefore, we have a remez in this pasuk for the details of the dinim of tzion. Etzem, when the pasuk says that they see a bone, mikan shemet sinan ala atzomis. From here we learn that you mark even when you just have bones that don't make up a full skeleton. But if you have, so you have a couple of different cases. You have a case where you have a roiva hakav, a quarter of a kav of bones. Those are of human bones, then those are matame ba'oihel, even if they don't make up the majority of the body. You also have the other way around. If you have 125 bones, which is the majority of the number of bones in the body, because you have 248, so then also those are matame ba'oihel, same thing, even if those don't make up a quarter of a calf, let's say they're from a little kid. So from this we learn that you have to mark not just for complete bodies, but even for bones, because after all, they're still matame ba'oihel. Adam, when the pasuk mentions a bone of a person, so that implies a bone which is recognizably specifically from a person. So therefore, we learn from that that you also mark if you find a spine over there, or if you find a human skull. Those all by themselves, whether it's machlokes rishonim, whether we mean a spine and a skull together is needed in order to be metame, or whether we mean just one or the other. But the point is, in other words, even though so now you don't have neither of those. Makes up the majority of the bones in the body, because in the spine you have 18 vertebrae, and in the skull you have nine. So that's nowhere near a majority. It's not necessarily more than a quarter of a calf, because again, if they're from a little kid, then they might not equal the amount. It might not equal the weight or the volume of a quarter of a calf. Still, those are matame, so therefore you have to mark those as well. The pasuk says uvana, you should build a marker. Mikan shemet sinan agabe evan kvua. From here we learn that you can put the mark on top of a stone that's fixed in place. In other words, the marker, the plaster doesn't dafka have to be on the ground. It can be on a stone, but only if that stone is fixed in place. And the reason for that is im oimer ata gabe evan tlusha, because if you allow the marking also on stones that are not firmly attached to the ground, then you have a problem. Then you're going to have that stone is eventually going to roll away or move away from there. Meanwhile, people are going to find plaster on it. They're going to incorrectly think that stone, there must be tumah underneath it. And therefore, if they touch it, they're going to think that they're tumah. And if tumah touched it or was over it, then they're going to think the tumah is tumah and go and burn it. And in fact, it's not going to be so. So therefore, if you're going to mark a stone, then it has to be a stone that's fixed in place. And we learn that from the word uvana that you build. Etzloi, the pasuk says that he builds next to it. Now, why next to it? Why not above it? Means l'mokam tara means that you have to put the marker in the area that's actually still tahor. Meaning, in other words, if you have, let's say, so you have a particular spot where there is a body. if you put this plaster only exactly till the edges of the body, the problem with that is that then somebody walking by, he's going to be walking by holding trauma. He's not going to notice. And then all of a sudden he finds himself over the white area. And therefore he's tummy and the trauma is tummy. We don't want that. Therefore, we want that the plaster should be a little bit beyond the area of the trauma in order that by the time, a person will notice it before they reach the area actually over the trauma. So you make it a few inches, a few extra inches or whatever further out. So that way you give them some leeway. The Gemara in Moed Katan, there's a sugya in the Bavli in Moed Katan that discusses this whole issue of tzion in much greater detail. And it mentions over there, you don't want to put it too far away because then you're mafsid Eretz Yisrael. Then you're ruining unnecessary parts of Eretz Yisrael because you're putting places off limits that don't need to be. So you don't want to put the plaster, you know, several feet away from the mess, but you want to put it a couple of extra inches or a foot or so maybe out in order to allow that leeway so a person has a time to catch themselves after they're over it before they and the truma that they have becomes tamei. And then when the pasuk says tzion mikam tzion, so that when the pasuk says that you build next day to tzion, so from here we look on this concept of tzion that you have to make some kind of simen where there are bones. Okay. Now here's some more dinim on the subject. The Gemara says umotza even achas mitzuyenes. Suppose that you find one stone that has a marking of plaster on it. Now alpha pisha in mekaimen kain. Now you're not supposed to leave it that way because we just said the plaster is supposed to be around. It's supposed to be not only exactly on top of the tumah but a little bit around it. So if you find a stone, if you find a single stone that has plaster on it. And the problem is that now the problem is on the face of it, it means that the whole stone is metame. So alpha pisha and mekayim and kain, even though you're not supposed to leave it like that, because what you're supposed to have is there should be plaster a little bit around the stone as well. Nevertheless, hamala lehatame. Nevertheless, if somebody overshadows that stone, then he's going to be tamei. Aniyom mes mitzuyon, because we figure what might have happened is there might have been a mess. Now mitzuyon means marked, but the word marked over here is not really relevant over here. Of course, it's marked with plaster. So Korban Eda says the word is supposed to be not mitzuyon but kamtsus, which means like there might be a mess that was buried in there, folded up. Usually you have a mess would be lying flat and then he would take up more space than the stone. But okay, conceivably what happened is over here, they buried a mess over there, folded up and then, so you have it, it's exactly under the stone and no further. So therefore, if a person overshadows the stone, then he's going to be tamei. And he was under that stone. And for that reason, anywhere under that stone is going to be tamei. But in that case, then you may not have to be concerned about the area outside the stone, because the fact is if the mess actually took up the area beyond the stone, then that area would have been marked as well. Next, hoyushtayim. What if you have two stones and you have plaster on them and a space on the ground between them? So then, hamal alehen tohur. So then, if you overshadow the stones themselves, then you're tohur. Ubeinehen tomei. Only between the stones is tomei, because the likelihood is the mess was buried between the stones, and you have sometimes they had, especially for important people, they'd put one stone at the head end and one at the foot end. And over here, we're saying that then they did exactly what they're supposed to. They marked the area beyond the body rather than on top of the body. So therefore, the assumption is the stones themselves are not over the body. They were just meant to mark off the edges of the area or a little bit beyond the edges of the area. And the area between them would be the one that's tummy. What about imhoya chodesh bentayim? What about if the area between the two stones looks like it was plowed up? Well, now there's no reason to think that a mess was buried between them, because you know nobody's going to plow over a grave. So then, hare and kiyachidius. Then we consider those stones as if they were two individual stones, where the rule is beinehen tohur svivisehen or svivisehen tomei, where then between them is going to be tohur, because presumably there's no bodies over there, and the area around the stones and under the stones is going to be tohur, is going to be tomei, like we said before. Okay. Another din in this connection. Tony, we learn at a brisa, ein mitzainen ala basar, we do not mark an area where there's flesh buried without bones, shemanis akala basar, because it's very likely pretty soon the flesh is going to decay. And once you have that, now if you have, there's the plaster can last a good long while over there. So you're going to have people pass by there, think that because there's plaster and they passed over it, they became tummy, and therefore their truma or their other taris are tummy, and that's going to be wrong. So therefore, we don't want to mark it in the first place. But the question then is, Rab Yusta Bar Shunim Boy Kumi Rab Mana. So Rab Yusta Bar Shunim asked Rab Mana, how could that be? Yeah, but don't you have the opposite problem? As long as that flesh doesn't decay, then people are going to pass over there. It's not going to be marked. They're not going to know they're tummy. And really they are. And then it comes out that that Taurus became tummy without knowing about it. Omalei, so Rav Mana answers him, true, but mutav she's skalkula by lasha, better that there should be a temporary problem until the flesh decays, v'al yiskalkula by la'olam, rather than it should be a mess up for a long time to come. Because if they make a tzion, if they put the plaster over there, people are going to think for a long time to come that there's tumma there, and then if somebody is there and then becomes and they thinks he became tummy and touches truma and he thinks that that truma is tummy, then you're going to be let's say, for example, Korban Eda says, let's say, for example, a person walked over it by night and Korban Eda and Tiklan Chadatin say, let's say, for example, a person walked over it b'shoigig or at night. So then he's and then he realizes, one second, there was plaster over there. Hey, I'm tummy. And then he's going to think that the truma that he touched is tummy and have to burn it. And of course, that's not going to be so, because there was no truma there anymore because the flesh decayed. So therefore, the Mana says better to have a temporary thing. And the Mefoshim say the vort is, in other words, that if you have flesh buried over there, it's only a short-term thing. It's not going to take very long for it to decay. So within those couple of days, until it does, you can have people will know about that there was flesh buried over there, and they'll know to stay away from it. So therefore, we're not so worried about what's going to happen during those couple of days, because most likely there'll be people around to tell them, but we don't want for the longer term to mess things up. With that said, by the way, the Bavli in the sugya in Moed Katan about this says that would only apply if they buried exactly a kazayas of flesh over there. If they buried a much larger amount, then not necessarily, because it will decay, but it's going to take time until it decays to the point you have less than a kazayas of it, and then you might have a long enough time where there would be a problem. So maybe that you would have to mark an arp, and according to that, what we're saying over here would only be if there was exactly a kazayas buried over there. Okay, so in a nutshell, those are the dinim of tzion. So if you have to mark, you have to mark an area where there's bones or bodies or whatever buried. But and we have these various rules about the details of what you mark and where you mark it and so forth. And so we're saying that the bati dinim that would arrange to start having that done beginning Tesvav Adar, because most likely they got washed away by the rain during the winter. And then if they got washed away again, then they would send people out during Chol Hamoed Pesach to redo them. Okay. Halacha Beis, the Mishnah says, we mentioned in the previous Mishnah, the last thing we said was that Shluchei Beis Din would start going out to look and see if people have kilayim in their fields. And so what would they do with it? So Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Barishono Hayu Oikurim HaShlichim Lefneihem. Originally, what would happen is if the Shluchei Beis Din came to the field and they found Kilayim there after the time, so they had announced Rosh Chodesh Adar, everybody go start looking at your fields and see if there's Kilayim in it. And if there are, then uproot them. Now Tesvav Adar, they're starting to come around again and check. So if they found Kilayim in the field, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, originally what they would do is they would uproot the Kilayim U'mashlichim Lefneihem and throw it on the ground in front of them. That way the person would be embarrassed. Like he should be embarrassed. Why didn't I bother doing that myself? Why did I have to have the Shluchei Beis Din do it for me? Mishirabu over Avera, but eventually you had more people who are doing Averas and are leaving the Kilayim and figuring, as we're going to say in the Gemara, that, okay, so we don't have to do it. We can rely on the Shluchei Beis Din to do it. So then, Hoyimashlichim l'drachim, so then they would throw it onto the roads where they were at least not usable for animal food because everybody tramples on it. Eventually, that didn't work either. His skin, Ushi Yomafkir, and it's called Asada. Eventually, the Chachamim made a takana that if the Shluchei Beis Din come and find Kilayim in the field, they will be Mafkir, the entire produce of the field. And that'll be an incentive to the person to make sure to get rid of the Kilayim before the Shluchei Beis Din show up, because otherwise he's going to lose all the produce of his field and somebody else could go and take it. So the Gemara says, we said, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Chumas, Tani, we learn in a Braisa, what was the reason behind these three, behind these three periods of the Takana? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, but Rishono Hayu Oikur Mashlichim Lefneihem, originally the Shluchei Beis Din would uproot the Kilayim and throw it on the ground in front of the owner of the field. The problem with that was, V'al Yismeichem Shtei Smachos, the owner of the field has two reasons to be happy. Number one, then they're weeding our field for us. After all, we're not talking about somebody who planted Kalayim Bemezid. We're talking about there was Kalayim mixed in accidentally among his seeds. So now, good. So you're going through my field and removing all my Kalayim. So good, you're doing a job for me in the field. You're weeding my field and getting rid of the plants that I don't need. And another thing is they can have enough from it because now they can feed it to animals. So then eventually there were people who were over the Avera. So now they're saying, you know what, we don't care if we have Kalayim because the Shluchei Beis Din will take care of it for us and then we don't have to do all the work and we'll have it for animal food. So the Shluchei Beis Din started throwing the Kalayim onto the roads where there at least the people are not going to be able to use it for animal food. But Alpha Pekin how you smechim, but the farmers were still happy for one reason. So Menachin, so they say, and because the Shluchei Beis Din are weeding and then removing harmful plants from their fields, his skin ushiumafkin, kolasanakola. So at that point the Beis Din made the takana. At that point the Chachamim made a takana that were mafkir the produce of the entire field. And that way, now nobody's gonna be smechim anymore if the Shluchei Beis Din come, and now therefore they'll have an incentive to take care of it themselves. So now we're saying that they're mafkir all the produce in the field, minayin shehefker based in hefker. Where do we get this concept that hefker based in is considered hefker, that based in has the ability to say about somebody's produce of his field that this is hefker? So the answer is dichtiv. You have a pasuk in Ezra. It describes over there how there was a problem. There were Jews who were intermarrying with goyish women. So Ezra and the Chachamim made an announcement that everybody has to gather to Yerushalayim in 3 days' time, so we can have a massive gathering of the people and get this taken care of. And they say v'chola shelo yover the shloisha seyamim. Anybody who doesn't come in the next 3 days, ba'atzasas ka'atzasas sorim ba'askenim, according to the advice of the sorim and the skenim, the sorim and skenim are mean the chachamim. Yachram kol rechushay, all of his property will be cherem, will all be confiscated. Vehu yibodah mekala goyla, and he will be separated from the congregation of the goyla, meaning that he himself will be put in cherem. So we see yachram kol rechushay means that Beis Din has the right to expropriate somebody's property for not listening to them. Okay. So the question is minayin sheep turam in a maestris. Okay. But now, how do we know that if Beis Din is declaring the produce hefker, so now it's one thing if a person himself, if the Baal HaBos himself is mafkir produce, then we know that it's potter from Trumas and Maisus. The Tikkun Chadatin brings over here from based on a pasuk that the Gemara elsewhere learns it from a pasuk that if a person is mafkir produce, then it's potter from Trumas and Maisus. But what about over here? We were saying fine, hefker based in hefker. How do you know that Beis Din has the ability to make it hefker to the extent where it's potter from Trumas and Maisus? Maybe they only have the ability to be mafkir at lechumra, that this person doesn't have it, but not lekula to say that anybody who takes it is now potter from Trumas and Maisus. And after all, I mean, that would be taken away. That would be taking away from the Truma and the Maisur, from the Kohenim and Levim. How do we know that Beis Din has the ability to do that? So Rabbi Yonas and Breder, Rabbi Yitzchak Ba'acha, Shama Lamin Hodr. Rabbi Yonasan, the son of Rabbi Yitzchak Ba'acha, showed that we can learn it from the following Braisa. Braisa says, "Ein me'abrinas hashana loy b'shvias v'loy b'metzoy shvias." You're not allowed to make an ibur yor back in those days when they made an ibur yor whenever necessary, not like nowadays when we have it on a fixed schedule. So you're not allowed to do it loy b'shvias v'loy b'metzoy shvias, not during Shemitah year and not during the year after Shemitah. The imibrua harezim uberes. Now, if they were over on that and they made an Ibru year during a Shemitah year or during the year after a Shemitah year, then b'diyevet it's ma'uber. Now, the reason why we don't want to make it during Shemitah year, so one reason Tiklan Chadatin says, because we don't want to have to force the people to leave their fields unplanted and to leave them fallow for an extra month. It's hard enough for them during Shemitah, so we don't want to have to extend Shemitah out by another month. The Gemara itself here is going to give in a couple, is going to give in another line, another reason for it. Why you can't do Matzoi Shemitah, we'll explain soon in the Gemara, why not? In any case, the point is, the Gemara says, consider, v'chodesh echad shu moisif, loy potter mimaisresu. Now think of it, we're saying that they're not supposed to make an Ibur Yor during Shemitah, but b'dievet, if they did, then it's still a valid Ibur. Now, after all, if they do that, if they're over on that and they make an Ibur Yor during Shemitah, after all, the produce during that month is also going to be Potter from is also going to be Potter from Trumas and Miseris. So therefore, so you see, so it must be that Hefka based in is valid, even Lakula, even as far as that it becomes Potter from Trumas and Miseris, because otherwise it's going to cause tremendous confusion. It's going to come Elul time, and really because it shouldn't have been an Ibriyur, then really that's already Tishrei, and any produce that was picked during any vegetables that were picked during that time, or a Srogim that were picked during that time, or produce or fruit that grew more than one third of its growth during that month is going to be chayev in Maisris, and yet we're going to treat it as though it's potter because we're going to treat it as shmita fruit. So the fact that we're not worried about that shows that Beis Din has the ability to make hefker, not only to make something hefker, but also to say that that will affect the dinim of Trumas and Maisris and say that it will in fact be potter. So now, in a little bit, the Gemara is going to slug up that proof. But before we get to that, let's figure out, okay, ad kedun shvius. So, okay, that explains what we can understand why the Chachamim don't want to make a, why we don't want the Chachamim to make an Ibriyur during Shemitah, because again, it means that there's an extra month where they're not allowed to work the land. Matsoi shvius mai. Why would we not want to make an Ibriyur during Matsoi shvius, during the year after Shemitah? Because we don't want to extend the amount of time that chodosh is also. The chodosh only be the new crop of grain that grew during the winter time only becomes mutter on the second day Pesach when they bring the korban omer. So you don't want that. So that means that during Matzoi Shemitah, during the year after Shemitah, you have new crops were planted Tishrei Cheshvan time, which is already the eighth year, the year of Hakel. They first grow, by the time they're ready to be harvested is Pesach time. And then you want people to be able to eat them right away. You don't want them to have to wait a whole nother month in order to eat them. In particular, it's not just that it would be a hardship for the people. It's also, we have to consider that the Beis Hamikdash is going to need newly grown barley for the Korban HaOmer, and they're going to need and like this, it's hard enough as it is. They have to appoint watchmen to guard over the Sfichim, to guard over. You have sometimes barley and other kinds of grains. You have seeds that fell from the farmer's hand during the year before, and then they grow spontaneously. So they would use those. They would appoint watchmen to watch a section of that. Which has enough barley for the purpose of the Korban Omer, and they would tell people, don't eat it, don't take it for yourselves, for yourselves to save till after the Omer or to feed to your animals or whatever, because we need it for the Beis Hamikdash. So if the Matzoi Shmita, if the Matzoi Shvius is a month longer than usual, then you're going to need to have these watchmen there for much longer, and that would be very, very hard to do. So therefore, we don't want an Ibriyur in Matzoi Shvius. Because of this problem of Chodosh, and during Shemitah itself, actually, you have the problem is you have number one that you it's a longer time that you can't work the land, and it's also again you have the same problem of Svichim during Shemitah also that people are going to end up eating them, and then there's not going to be enough left for the Omer and the Shtelachem. So those are the reasons why we don't want to make an Ibriyur during Shemitah or during Matzoi Shemitah. So the Gemara continues, Reb Zeira b'shem Reb Elazar, Reb Abahu, Hadad at Omar, this that we're saying that you're not supposed to make an Ibriyur during Shmita year, that only applies actually hit Rebbe lahavi yerek mechutz laaretz laaretz. That was before Rebbe was matter them to import vegetables from chutz laaretz. Now, the reason why before that it was usur is because vegetables, a lot of times you uproot them from the ground. You don't necessarily harvest them like you would wheat or whatever. You very often vegetables you uproot from the ground. Now the midrabanan, all lands outside Eretz Yisrael are tamei. The dirt of Eretz Amim, of lands outside Eretz Yisrael, is tamei because goyim would bury people indiscriminately all over the place, and therefore there's concern that there might be truma over there. So the din used to be that you're not allowed to import vegetables from Chutz La'aretz into Eretz Yisrael in order not to bring truma into Eretz Yisrael. But so that was the original din before Rebbe allowed it. But eventually Rebbe was matter them to do that because there was a shortage of food in his times. So therefore they had no choice. They have to import food in order that people should have what to eat. So then once you do that, then there's no difference between Shemitah and other years of the Shemitah cycle, because now we have, because we import vegetables, and Tiklum Chadatin says also grain, And then therefore they can always import grain from Chutz La'aretz. So therefore people will have that to eat. And therefore the svichim, therefore the grain that's growing spontaneously will be available. People are not going to be in such a hurry to go and grab it. And therefore it'll be available. And therefore it'll be available for the Omer and the Shtelach. And we said in the Brais that Tony ain't ma'abrin fuller. We said we also don't make an ibuyor and matzoi shvius. Amr mona hadad da atama berishoina show you ashanim ketiknan. So the mona says that also doesn't apply anymore. That was only originally where the years were the way they should be, where the crops would grow in their proper times. But nowadays, Rav Mona says, in our times, the crops don't always grow in their proper times. That's how Tiklin Chadatin explains it. Korban Eda says rather it means that nowadays large parts of Eretz Yisrael are in Goyish hands, and the Goyim, after all, are allowed to work the land during Shemitah. So then he shvius, he shar shnei shavua. So then Shemitah or Matzoi Shemitah are the same as other years. We don't care if the Issur Chodesh lasts a little longer because anyway the crops are not ready in their proper time because anyway they're ending up they're mature after the time anyhow. So regardless, even if you didn't make an Ibuyor, anyway the crops wouldn't be ready to eat by the 16th of Nisan, so therefore adding an extra month is not that big a deal. Or according to Korban Eda, the vote is that nowadays that large parts of Eretz Yisrael are in Goyish hands, then there's no difference between Shemitah and other years. You can always make an Ibuyor even during Shemitah because unfortunately there's large parts that are in Goyish hands and we'll be able to buy produce from them anyway. We don't even need to import from Chutz La'aretz. Actually, one of the Achronim who has a pirush on Seder Zroyim and on this Masechta called Reb Shlomo Cirilio has a girsa the other way around. That originally, when Shonim Ketikunan, when the years were the way they should be, meaning that the promise that the Torah says about Shemitah was in effect, that if you keep Shemitah properly, then during the sixth year, you'll have enough crops that you'll have enough crops to be able to last you through the whole Shemitah and the whole eighth year until the crops from the eighth year are ready to be brought into the house the beginning of the ninth year, then in that time, then you could make an Ibuyor during Shemitah because there's no problem. There's plenty of food available based on that bracha. But in later times, where the bracha didn't always take effect because people weren't always as careful with Shemitah, and because Bechlal, there's opinions that Shemitah nowadays is only Derabbanan, then they had to make this rule that you can't make a leap year during Shemitah or during Matzoi Shemitah because of the hardships that it would give for the people as far as having food to eat. And as far as being able to get barley for the shtela, for the oimer. Okay, so in this connection, Tony, we learn in a brisa, shall base Rabban Gamliel ibru b'metzoi shvius miyad. We learn in a brisa that in the household of Rabban Gamliel, they declared an ibruyor right away, the first thing metzoi shvius, meaning that they announced Tishrei time already of the eighth year that this adar is going to be an ibruyor. So again, we see from that there's no problem making an ibruyor during the eighth year. Again, for the reason that we said, because nowadays we're allowed to import vegetables and grain from Chutz La'aretz without worrying about the tumah, and nowadays large parts of Eretz Yisrael are in Goyish hands, and therefore we can get food from there, etc. Okay. Now, we said that the reason why we got into this whole discussion about Shemitah and Metzoi Shemitah as far as Ibuyorin is because we were trying to bring that as a proof that Hefker, based in Hefker, even Lekula, we say that that when they declare produce Hefker, then it's Potter from Trumah and Maestris. Because otherwise, how are you declaring it that it's Shemitah produce and making it Potter from Trumah and Maestris if you're allowed to make an extra month, if B'dieved, they're allowed to make an Ibuyor during a year, during Shemitah, or during Metzoi Shemitah, where we're saying they shouldn't. However, Amr of Ovun, so Ovun says, in min hadah, if that's what you bring the proof from, less at shmamin aklum, then you can't prove anything from that, because after all, the Pasuk says, shomer es chodesh aviv, the Pasuk says, guard the month of aviv, meaning shamrehu shiyaviyu b'chidoshay, meaning it's based in his responsibility to make sure that Pesach comes out in the right season, that comes out in the spring. So therefore, in other words, so midaraisa, they do have to make an ibuyor. This that we're saying that you shouldn't do it during Shemitah or during Metzoi Shemitah, fine, they shouldn't. But the fact of the matter is, if they did make an Ibuyor during that year, they still are Makayim, the Dinda Araisa, of making an Ibuyor. So you can't say that they should, you could say maybe they shouldn't have done it, but you can't say that that would show that they don't have the ability to be mafkir because they add an extra month when they shouldn't. Because after all, the Torah doesn't, the pasuk when it says shomer eschodesh aviv doesn't make any such distinctions. It just says they should make an ibriyur whenever they see fit. So therefore, and they did, they made an ibriyur when they see fit. So of course it's potter. That doesn't prove anything about a case of hefker based in hefker where they're saying about an individual person's produce that it's going to be hefker, that therefore it should be potter from that therefore it should be potter from terms of maizris, not necessarily. So the Heda Amada, okay, so what is the source that we can get that Beis Din is able to make something hefker and pattern it from Truma and Meiser? So like this, you have a Mishnah in Masechta Peah that says, Godish Shalalukat Tachtav. Now like this, we have the Torah tells us that one of the things you have to leave for poor people in your field is leket, is if while you're harvesting the grain, you drop one stalk or two stalks of grain, then you have to leave it for the poor people. That's leket. So now what happens is you had your field is covered with leket. You have individual stalks like that that you dropped here and there in the field. Now let's say before the Aniyim came and took their leket, you decided to take your grain and make a stack of it in the middle of the field, above the leket. So the rule is, kol hanogus ba'aretz harehein zeh shel aniyim. And the Chachamim made a knas that anything in that pile that touches the ground goes to the aniyim. In other words, we penalize him for the fact that he made that pile of grain on top of this leket rather than giving a chance to the aniyim to get the leket first. So therefore, we say anything that's touching any stalks of grain in that pile that are touching the ground, then the Chachamim are mafker it and it goes to the poor people. The Amr of Ami B'Shem Rav Shimon Lakish. Now Rav Ami tells us in the name of Rish Lakish, the Beis Shammai. That Mishnah is specifically according to Beis Shammai, the Ika Beis Hillel, because if it can't be, it goes according to Beis Hillel, because Aniyim Ochlanum Astrim, because according to Beis Hillel, now you have a machloikus elsewhere in Mishnayas Peah, can a person make something hefker only for poor people? Beis Shammai says yes, Beis Hillel says no. So according to Beis Shammai, this is hefker only for poor people. So therefore, so we can say the original leket was reserved for poor people. The new sheaves of grain, the new stalks of grain that are touching the ground, which the Chachamim penalized and said belong to the Aniyim, are also they're also reserved for the Aniyim exclusively. So when we say that they all have the din of leket, then it would mean the poor people could eat them without having to take meiser. But according to Beis Hillel, the poor people should have to take meiser from it. And the Mishnah didn't say any such thing. V'omalei Rabbi Yosi, but Rabbi Yosi tells Rabbi Ami, no, it has nothing to do with hefker la'aniyim versus not, where then you could argue that Beis Hillel would say that they have to take ma'aser from it. No, shamanu shu potim ma'aser divrei hakol. We heard from our Rebbeim that everybody would agree, even Beis Hillel, that it's potter from ma'aser mishum knasa because of a knas. Because the Chachamim canceled him, the Chachamim penalized him for putting his stack of grain on top of it, and therefore, so therefore, it's hefker based in, and therefore, even Beis Hillel would agree that it's potter from Meiser. So sure enough, you see that hefker based in is potter from Meiser. So that's the proof for that. So the same thing in our Mishnah, when the person has kilayim in his field, and after the third, in the third stage, we're saying that the Chachamim are mafkir his produce, the produce of that field, then what we're saying is that is going to be potter from Meiser on the grounds of this, that we see just like in that case over there about the stack of grain, that the Chachamim are able to be mafkir it, and that part that they were mafkir is potter from Meiser, the same thing over here. Okay. Getting back now to dinim about the matzah shekel, halacha gimel, the Mishnah says, b'chamisha osabai shulchonos hayoyoshim b'menina, on the 15th, now one thing, so we said that on Rosh Chodesh Adar, they started announcing that everybody has to start getting together the matzah shekel. Now on the 15th of Adar, besides all these other things, we mentioned Derech Agav, all these other things that the Sanhedrin, that the Beis Din would start taking care of on Tesvav Adar. So now also on Tesvav Adar, you would have Shulchanos Hayoyoshim Medina. You would have money changers that would be sitting in the Medina. Now Medina literally Medina has a couple of meanings. It can mean a large city. It can also generally the meaning of Medina is a large city. So the various Mephoshim over here talk about different possibilities. It can be the Rivavon says that it means throughout all the large cities in Eretz Yisrael. Korban Ha'eda and Tiklan Chazitin give that as a possible explanation, but they say also it might mean Davka in Yerushalayim. Now, the reason why you need money changers, first of all, those money changers are the ones who are actually collecting the Machzah Shekel. so people could bring it to there. Second of all, though, you also have people are coming with small change that has to be changed for a machzor shekel coin. Because, for example, imagine you have a person only has prutas. A person, let's say, was saving up money for their machzor shekel, and they only have copper prutas. Those need to be exchanged for a silver machzor shekel to be brought to the Beis Mikdash. So therefore, the shulchanos, the money changers, would be responsible for that. You'd also have people are coming from different other countries with coins with coins from their own countries, and the money changers need to be able to exchange them for machzor shekel coins, for ones that are the proper weight and so forth. Okay, so that was on the 15th. B'chaf hei yashu b'mikdash. Beginning the 25th of Adar, they would be sitting in the Beis Mikdash. That way, the people in the villages near Yerushalayim would start coming and bring their matzah shekel. So this way, also Tiklan Chazitin says they would sit and Korban Eda, they would sit in the Beis Mikdash in order to remind people, you better hurry up. You only have 4 days left, and you only have 4 days left, so you better hurry and start bringing your matzah shekel. And once from the 25th, from when they're sitting in the Beis Mikdash, then they would start taking a mashkin. If they see that there's somebody who's not giving machzor shekel, then Beis Din would have the right to send somebody into his house and take a mashkin. And if eventually he pays his machzor shekel, then he gets his mashkin, then he gets his collateral back. Otherwise, they can keep the collateral itself and sell it in order to raise the machzor shekel. The idea behind it is, I mean, the machzor shekel has meant that everybody needs to have a portion in the korbanos. So therefore, so you do that. There's different understandings of, is it based on the idea that it's a monetary debt that he owes, and the din is if a person owes money and he's not paying it, then Beis Din can take collateral from him. Is it because of that? Or is it more because it's a mitzvah and Beis Din has the ability to force a person to do a mitzvah saseh even if he doesn't feel like doing it? The famous that they can force him until he says, I agree. A famous thing in the Rambam that the Yid deep down wants to listen to what the Eibishter says. I think it was recently in Perek Echad of Rambam. Anyway, so that would be a reason why they can take a mashkin. Es mima mashkinin. Now, who can they take a mashkin from? Levim v'Yisraelim, but not koyanim, as we're going to say further in the Mishnah. V'gerim, v'avodim v'shachrorim, freed slaves. All of them are chayev in machzor shekel. Therefore, the Beis Din can take collateral from them and force them to pay the machzor shekel. Avaloi noshim v'avodim v'ktanim, but not women, because later on in the next Mishnah, we're going to say that women could bring matzah shekel if they want, but they're not obligated to. So therefore, Beis Din is not going to take a mashkin from them for it. And also avodim, same thing. Avodim knanim generally are chayev only in the same mitzvahs that women are, and therefore, if women are potter, then so are they. Uktanim and children. On the other hand, v'chol katan shehischol aviv lishkol al yodei, any child where his father already started giving matzah shekel on his behalf, shuv eini posik, then the father is not allowed to stop afterwards. He has to continue. Once you already gave for him last year and you already made that you're doing this mitzvah on his behalf, then keep on doing it on his behalf. One explanation is that it's based on the idea of a neder. Relevant now before Pesach, you have the minhag of Tainis Bechorim, and you have the minhag that when you have a child who's a Bechor and he's below Bar Mitzvah, then you fast on his behalf, or you make sure to hear a Siyum on his behalf. The Magen Avraham points out, similar to here, that if one year you started fasting or hearing a Siyum on his behalf, then you have to continue doing that, the same way as we're saying over here, that if you gave Machzor Shekel for your child 1 year, then you have to keep on doing it. Okay, continues the Mishnah. Now, we don't take a mashkin from the koyanim because of darkei shalom. Because the Gemara is going to bring over here that there is an opinion continuing in our mission, that there is an opinion that the Kohenim are actually potter from Machzor Shekel completely. So even though the halacha is that they're chayev, we can't really force them to. And also, there's a matter of you have a mitzvah with a Kohen, v'kidashtoy, you have to make the Kohen holy and treat him with respect. So therefore, you don't take a mashkin from him. So the Mishnah continues, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Hayed ben Bukhri b'Yavne. Rabbi Yehuda says that Ben Bukhri, that was his name, gave Eidos in Yavne, in front of the Chachamim, in front of the Sanhedrin. Kol Koyen Sheshoikil, any Koyen who brings Machzor Shekel, Enei Choyte is not doing an Avera by that. Now, why would we think he should be doing an Avera? Because if he's not required to bring Machtze Shekel, then there's an argument you could say that then maybe if he does bring Machtze Shekel, then you have part of the Karbonis Tzibur being brought from private money. He's not necessarily giving it over wholeheartedly to the Tzibur. So therefore you have Karbonis Tzibur being brought from private money, and you can't do that. So Rabbi Yehuda is telling us, no, you don't have to worry about that. That we can assume that when he gives it b'leiv shalom, and he means to be, and he gives it over to the tzibur completely, but not that he's required to. Amalei Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. So Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai says to Ben Bukhri, loiki, it's not like that. What you're saying is backwards. Not kol koyin sheshoikel ene choyte, but the other way around. Ela kol koyin sheene shoikel choyte. Any koyin who does not give the machzah shekel is doing an aveira. Meaning the Kohenim are just as much chayev in Machzah Shekel as everybody else, because they also have to have a portion in the Korbanos Tzibur. The Rivavon brings over here a mashal, like if a person has an infection on his foot and he doesn't want to get surgery, then the doctor is going to tie him down and do the surgery anyway, because otherwise it's going to kill him. The same way Hashem says that let's take a mashkin from a person in order that the Korbanos Tzibur will be brought on behalf of everybody. So okay, we're saying that the Kohenim, we want to show them honor, and therefore we don't take a mashkin from them, but they are in fact, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, they are in fact chayev in machzah shekel, and if they don't, then they're doing an aveira. Ella, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai explains, so how did it come about that the Kohenim think that they're potter? Shakohenim doshim mikras el atzman. The Kohenim doshim this following pasuk for themselves, meaning for their own benefit, or the way they think to doshim it, which is not really correct. By the way, you have it, there's different places where it talks about whether Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai himself was a Kohen. If he was, then obviously he wasn't one of the Kohenim who thought this way. Anyway, the Pasuk says, V'chol minchas Kohen kol ti eloi se'achol. This week's parasha, it says any mincha brought by a Kohen has to be burnt completely, and you don't eat any part of it. So the Kohenim argued, Hoyov omo shte'alechem b'lechem aponim shalonu hein, if Kohenim are contributing Machzah Shekel, and then it comes out that the omo and the shte'alechem and the lechem aponim are partially brought from money that came from the Kohenim, then heyach ne'echolin, how would you be allowed to eat them? They should be considered the mincha of a Kohen, and they would be, and it would be also to eat them. So the fact is, so Ben Bukhri is saying, and Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai is saying, you Kohenim like Ben Bukhri are using this as an argument, that therefore that's a source to say that you shouldn't have to bring Machzah Shekel, only if you feel like it, then you could. And Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai is saying, no, that's not a valid argument. Because the fact of the matter is that once you give it to the Tzibur, it's not your own money anymore. So the Gemara says, "Ein mamashkin esaktanim." We're saying you don't take a mashkin from children for Machzah Shekel. Hold it to boya tovin. Now the implication is you do tell them, the shulchanos, the money changers, do tell them you need to bring Machzah Shekel. But if they don't, then we don't force them to. So hadada tamar, that only applies b'shehevi shtei sairus, only if the child is old enough that everybody has shtei sairus by mitzvah age. Avlim lehevi beis sairus loy b'da. But if he doesn't, if he's younger even then by mitzvah and he doesn't even have shtei sairus, then he's not even in that category. You don't even ask him. You don't even ask him for machzah shekel at all. Olamashkin and mamashkin and shiyavi shtei sairus or alpha p'shehevi beis sairus. As far as taking a mashkin, that you don't do unless he has shtei sairus or a different girsa. Even if he has shtei sairus, there are different girsas over here. Another girsa that Agoyis HaGra brings, you don't take a mashkin until he's 20. So according to that girsa, in other words, the idea would be below bar mitzvah, you don't even demand the machzah shekel from him at all. Between bar mitzvah and 20 years old, you do demand it, but you don't take a mashkin. And over 20 years old, then he's chayev, then he's fully chayev, and then you take a mashkin from him if he doesn't give. Okay, keni masnissin, and now let's explain what the Mishnah means. Where this is how you should understand the Mishnah when we said ein mamashkin as a koyanim, mipnei derech hakoved, because it wouldn't be bekoved to force the koyan to give machzah shekel. After all, they do the avoida of the korbanos, so therefore, so if you force them to give machzah shekel, they're likely to push back, and there's likely to be a fight. What do you mean you're forcing me to give machzah shekel? I'm already contributing towards the korbanos. I work in the Bais Hamikdash and I do the avoida for free. So don't make me also have to pay the machzah shekel. So even though it's not really a valid argument, nevertheless, in order to avoid fights, we're not going to force them to give machzah shekel. And then that's one reason the Korban Eda says. And the other reason is because you have a mitzvah of the kiddashdei to show honor to a kohen. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Hayin Cholo. Rabbi Yehuda had said about what Ben Bukhri said, that a Kohen is allowed to give Machzah Shekel, but he's not required to. And Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai disagreed and said, no, they are required to. Amar Rabbi Berechia, time of the Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai. Where does Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai get that the Kohen are Machayev? Because the Pasuk says, Zeh Yitnu. It says, Zeh This they should give, and that means Yud Beis Shvatim Yitnu, all 12 Shvatim are Chayev in Machzah Shekel. So that includes the Kohenim and the Levim, includes the entire Shevet Levi. So the Gemara says, Reb Tovi b'shem Reb Hamnuna, Kein Meshivin Chachamim L'Reb Yehuda. Now the Chachamim argued back against Reb Yehuda, the Chachamim argued back against Reb Yehuda, and the Chachamim hold like that the Kohenim are required to bring Matzah Shekel. Rabbi Yehuda is saying, like Ben Bukhri, that they're potter. So then the question would be, what do you mean? According to your Svara, then it should be also for them to bring. If you're saying they're not required to, then they should actually be also to bring. Because think of it like this, the same way as Chatas Yochid Mesa and Chatas Tzibur Mesa, the same way as you say there's a distinction between a Chatas of a Yochid, where you have certain cases where Chatas is possible and you have to leave it to die. But on the other hand, that rule doesn't apply to a Chatas Tzibur. A Chatas Tzibur, in those scenarios, you never leave it to die. You just leave it to graze until it develops a mum and sell it and buy another one. The same thing, the same thing is as far as the mincha of a yachid, and a koyan brings a mincha of his own, it's going to be completely burnt. But the mincha of the tzibur is not going to be completely burnt. So therefore, in other words, yeah, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you're saying the koyanim are not required to bring matzah shekel, then what do you mean they're not required? But if they do, there's no avera. Don't you have exactly that problem that the korban ha'omer is going to end up getting eaten, and it shouldn't. It should get burnt. So how can Rabbi Yehuda be like splitting the difference? Either he should be saying they're required to, like the Chachamim and like Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai, or he should be saying they're also to, so that the omer and the shtei alechem don't get burnt. Where does he get from to say in the middle over there that they don't have to, but they could?
We're not talking here about a Yachid Kohen. We're talking about the whole Shevet Levi. What are we talking about?
Fine, but each Kohen individually is bringing Matzah Shekel.
Say that, because then what's the meaning of the word Zeh? Is you say so it applies to everybody?
So we could say that Zeh means that the Leviim, maybe not the Kohenim. But leaving aside the limud from the word Zeh, we have to ask, practically speaking, how is it? So that's the thing. So either Rabbi Yehuda should be saying, either Rabbi Yehuda and Ben Bruchu should be saying, yeah, based on Zeh, that everybody's chayev to bring, Kohenim included. Or we should say that it's also for them to bring, because if they do bring it, then the Omer and the Shtei Lechem, then like that argument goes, the Omer and the Shtei Lechem are going to have to get burnt rather than eaten. We see that they eat them. So that's the question. Right. So Rabbi Yehuda seems to be inconsistent. That's how the Tiklan Chadatin explains the question. The Korban Ha'edah explains the question as differently. That why would Rabbi Yehuda hold that there's even a problem with the Omer and the Shtei Lechem, given that here it is, after all, a Korban Sibur. And a Korban Sibur is different than a Korban Yochid in this regard. So just because a Yochid brings a mincha and it gets burnt, doesn't show that if the Tzibur brings it and the Tzibur includes Koyanim, that it should get burnt. Okay, so the Gemara says, I have to ask, how are the Chachamim using that as a question against Rabbi Yehuda anyway? For Kasha, the question is,
Was Rabbi Yehuda a Kohen?
No, but what's the difference? He's quoting what Ben Bukhri says, and apparently he approves of it. But the question is, we have to finish up over here. So let's the kasha. But the problem is, mishivin la'adam davasha in emodibay. How can you ask a stira for a person on something that he himself doesn't agree with? The tnan she'ein chatas tzibur meisir of Yehuda im atamus. In a Mishnah in Yuma, it talks about a case over there involving the Seirim on Yom Kippur. If one of them becomes posel, so the Chachamim say because the carbon Sibur, then you don't leave it to die, you leave it to graze till it develops a mum. But Rabbi Yehuda says you do, because he holds the rules for a Chatas Yochid are the same as a Chatas Sibur. So what are you even bringing the contradiction against Rabbi Yehuda that there's a difference between the Yochid and the Sibur if, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there is no such distinction anyway? Vuhu Moisivlon. So Rabbi Yehuda can answer the Chachamim, Zulo Nidvas Yachidi. After all, this is not the same thing, because this is not a regular Nidava of a Yachid, where you can say he's not giving it over to the Tzibur at all. Here he does give it over to the Tzibur, so it's not really considered a Nidava of a Yachid anymore. So therefore, there wouldn't really be a problem with that you eating these things when they should be burnt. Fine, that I don't have a problem with. But nevertheless, he's not required to. So he's not required to, but he's not doing an Aveda if he does, because once he gives it over to the Tzibur, then it's not considered his private korban anymore. Okay, ve'inun masivinlei, but the Chachamim answer him back, kivin shenimsiru l'tzibur, kamishu nidvas tzibur. Once he gave it over to the Tzibur, then it's considered like something that goes to the tzibur. So therefore, according to them, there's no reason to even say that the kohenim should be potter. You want to argue that they're potter because, after all, there is a certain ownership that they retain over it to the extent where it can be considered a minchas yochid, and therefore we would say that it should be burnt, except we're saying don't worry about that and allow them to give it if they want. I'm saying never mind that. There's no bilus of them at all over it. Therefore, there's no question to begin with that it has to be eaten rather than burnt, and therefore there's no reason to potter kohenim him from it altogether. Okay, so the Gemara finishes off. Ksiv kola over al apkudim. You have a posik that says anybody who passes over the counting has to give matzah shekel. So what does kola over mean? Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya. So Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya argue what that word kola over means. Chad de ama kol de over b'yam yitin. One says it means any Jew who passed through the Yam Suf has to give matzah shekel. So in that case, that includes kohenim. V'chorona omar, the other one says, called the over al pikudaya yitin, means anybody who was counted among the Jewish people, or separately, for example, Levim were counted separately, then they have to give. So manda omar called the over b'yama yitin messiah l'Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai, the one that understands that it means everybody who crossed through the Yamsuf, that's like Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai's shita, kohenim achayev, they also crossed through the Yamsuf, same as all the other Jews. Manda omar called the over al pikudaya yitin, whereas the opinion that says that it means anybody who passed through to be counted, messiah l'Ben Bukhri, he would be supporting Ben Bukhri's opinion, the kohenim we don't find were counted at all. The Levim, that depends, actually, the Tiklan Chadatin says it means everybody who was counted in the one count of the main count of Bnei Yisrael, so therefore that would exclude Levim and that would exclude Kohenim and Levim. Whereas the Korban Eda says, after all, the Levim were counted; they were just counted separately. So even according to that, Levim would be Chayev, but Kohenim would be Potter either way, because the Kohenim we don't ever find, not in Parshas Bamidbar and not in Parshas Pinchas, where they were actually enumerated and counted. So then, according to that, if we understand the Pasuk that way, then that supports Ben Bukhri that at least the Kohenim and maybe even the Levim are Potter from Matzah Shekel. Okay. Shkayach, everyone.